you worked for Hewlett-Packard for 37 years in microwave and RF work. Did that have any fallout in your speaker design work that you began to do?
Yeah, it had quite a bit of fallout there because electromagnetic waves, and they have certain analogies with acoustic waves. I always like to tell my friends I'm building antennas that go from 20 megahertz to 20 gigahertz, and they could immediately visualize what that meant in terms of wavelengths and get some idea how difficult of a job that might be.
And you got into the audio thing as a hobby while you were working for Hewlett-Packard?
Yeah, strictly as a hobby. HP had no interest in audio.
And you interested some of your co-workers as well, I gather?
Well, it worked mutually. There were some of my co-workers that actually got me interested in audio, and then the interest spread there. So there was quite a group at HP, and still is. It's always interesting how many people do on the side some loudspeaker project or build their own receiver or amplifier or something of that sort.
You have an approach to speaker design that you carried out with audio artistry speakers for some time. It's a little different from the run-of-the-mill dynamic speaker design. Could you tell us how you got into that?
Well, I experimented practically with every approach to speaker design for years. I pursued the box speaker, small satellites with a center channel subwoofer, but eventually got so frustrated with the problems that deal with boxes and how to tame the sound that is pushed into the box behind the cone there that I sort of pursued the open baffle design where the sound can radiate freely front to back, which eliminates a lot of the box problems.
And that makes a much shallower speaker, too, that looks better in the room, right?
Well, that's a side effect. Yeah, it makes a shallower speaker, but it also has to be wider because in this kind of a design, you have an acoustic short circuit between front and back, and you have to have a minimum of pass lengths between front and back so that the acoustic short circuit is not too effective. Otherwise, you have to equalize too much.
How did you develop this to what was your standard live music, I presume?
Well, yeah, my reference throughout has always been live music. I love music, particularly classical music, and so I've been avid symphony goer for many years there. And I remember many times the experience coming home from a concert and then turning on the stereo system and sort of being disappointed that there is something really missing here in terms of the tonal color and the dynamics that really made me pursue to find out what it is. Is there some way to approach this a little bit better?
What was your first breakthrough in that direction?
Well, really, the first breakthrough was along the lines of open baffle speakers. Now, that's not anything new there. There have been lots of electrostatics and magnetic-type, panel-type radiators. And I always had a fondness for those types of speakers. But I thought they suffered from a lack of dynamic range, you know, the maximum between loud and soft there. And they were also very tricky in terms of room placement because their radiation characteristics are not very ideal. They're just too large area radiators. So I was trying to use some of the best characteristics of those types of speakers without the drawbacks that they have.
So you heard that top of the line of the audio artistry series was what you have here is now a three-way plus the subwoofer, right?
Yeah, the top of the line is three ways plus subwoofer, so altogether four-way system. And it uses dynamic drivers instead of film-type radiators. Dynamic drivers so we can push more air and get higher volume levels because I think that it's important to listen to music at live-like level.
On your website, you mentioned some of the things that alter or distort the sounds of the original live music and that it can be either additive or subtractive. And the first thing you list, even before the room effect, is nonlinear dynamics. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, it's a big word there, but basically what it means is it's a term you're familiar with from distortion, harmonic distortion type measurements, where you put in one tone and you get harmonics of the tones generated for free in the speaker. But it doesn't end there. When you put in two tones, you don't only get the harmonics of those two tones, you get all the intermodulation products and the mixings between those tones. And that, I'm convinced, is far more important than purely harmonic distortion. they always go together. If you have harmonic distortion, you have intermodulation. They are the same, caused by the same physical phenomenon. But subjectively, I think it's the intermodulation, which creates tones that are not harmonically related, is much more severe than if everything was just pure harmonic distortion.
And that's all occurring in the actual speaker, mechanically, in the driver, and so on?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's occurring in the drivers. The drivers are a real weak link there. And I've been looking long and hard for the driver that has really very good low distortion characteristics, nonlinear distortion characteristics.
And you also mentioned as part of that the effect is gain compression and clipping. I thought that was more of an electronic thing. How does that happen?
No, actually, drivers will essentially clip. You know, they wander out of the magnetic gap. They reach a maximum that they can move, and it's just another form of nonlinear distortion.
Does that have anything to do with their efficiency and how hefty an amplifier you have powering them and so on?
Well, the bigger the amplifier, the more readily you can push the speaker cone into that region where they just can't handle it anymore. But it's inherently every device, just like an amplifier, which has a maximum headroom that it can reproduce there. So every cone-type speaker or planar speaker has a limited excursion range. You know, it's basically a membrane moving, and eventually it runs either into a stop or the surround gets stretched too much. They basically clip and limit eventually. But long before that happens, you have distortions, and mostly due to the motor, namely the magnet and voice coil structure. I'm quite frankly not as much concerned about the large level clipping and distortion as I am about the low level clipping, like when you run like 1 watt through a driver. I think that is very important and usually is not looked at very much. When you listen to music, even if you listen at live levels, when you monitor the power that is used from your amplifier, usually it's just in the 1 watt or a few watt range, and only occasionally do you need really high power levels. So most of the listening is taking place at low-level amplifier requirements, and so the distortion of the amplifier and the speaker at those low levels is very important.